listening to the Sports Rehab Experts Podcast. We sit down with some of the most highly regarded experts in the field of rehab, from physical therapists, athletic trainers, and much more. We dive into what makes them tick and hear about the lessons they have learned along their journey. Come listen to what these experts have to say. And welcome inside to another episode of the Sports Rehab Experts Podcast. Today we have Simon Rice, who is the Vice President of Athlete Care for the Philadelphia 76ers. Simon, welcome on in.
All right, thanks Chase, thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
All right, Simon, give people a little bit of background about who you are and kind of what got you involved in physical therapy.
Sure. So Simon Rice, like you said, my accent is probably softened, but Australian initially. Probably the easiest way to do it is I'll give you a quick summary of what my role is now, and then I can kind of give you a bit of a whistle-stop tour of how I've ended up here. So my role here is a really interesting one, actually. It's overseeing and managing all of athlete care at the 76ers. So that includes the training room, so our physical therapy staff, our soft tissue and massage staff, our athletic trainers, the performance group, so our strength and conditioning coaches, nutrition. So the nutrition program, we have a full-time nutritionist. We also have a number of chefs oversee that. Oversee our functional medicine program, which is super interesting, as well as our mental skills program. So pretty all-encompassing, but it's something I really enjoy. And the overarching theme of my role really is two parts. One, to have players available as often as possible, but not just available to perform. So I see it in two parts. One, reduce injury risk, so we have high player availability, and the second part is increase player performance. So that's my current role.
Gotcha. So that's super cool, and I want to get more into that in a little bit later, but kind of tell us, so you said you're from Australia. So kind of tell us a little bit more about your journey, you know, through kind of after school, and kind of tell us a little bit more about that.
Okay. Yep. So I've had a really varied journey, and it's something that I actually really enjoy talking about, because I think it's something that is really relevant for people that are trying to make their way into professional sport. So I've had a lot of very, very different experiences. I started off my career in strength and conditioning, an internship at the ACC Academy of Sport. I was really fortunate that when I started that, there were some excellent coaches already working there. So I was able to do an internship for 12 months, learn from some really good coaches. And that sort of started me off on my journey into, I guess, elite sport and professional sport. So from there, I worked in strength and conditioning for a period of time at the National Institute Network in Australia, so the Academy of Sport, a little bit of the Australian Institute of Sport, and in some professional rugby programs. I went back and studied physical therapy, and then following that did another master's in sports physical therapy in Australia. And then I transitioned into rehabilitation, also physical therapy roles in elite and professional sport. So I've been involved with the Australian National Cricket Program, Australian Volleyball Team, and Hockey Program. So a good mix of different sort of sports, court-based, individual team sports. I've worked with some Paralympic and Olympic athletes at the Australian Institute of Sport, which is really interesting. And then also as the head physical therapist for professional rugby. So that's all my sport experience before I came across into the NBA. I've also worked, we worked in London, the United Kingdom, for 3 or 4 years. And my role there was actually working with Western shows, so dancers and performers. And what's really interesting is some of the things I learned there, and particularly around foot strength and mechanics for ballerinas and performers, is something that we use a lot in professional sport now. So I've had a really wide variety of experience in a lot of different settings, and it's given me a good background, I think, for the role that I'm in at the moment.
Right. And so, you know, talking, you worked in multiple different sports like volleyball, rugby, all the way to dance, professional dance and ballet. So what are some things that you kind of, like you talked about, that are applicable to professional basketball now? What are some of those things that you learn from other sports, not even like skills wise, but, you know, kind of how you manage athletes and kind of how that helps you in your role today?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. And it's something I've spent a lot of time thinking about, actually. So one of them, which is probably not obvious, is the NBA is a really dense game schedule, as a lot of people know. It can be every... So we're about to head into 5 games in 7 nights. That's not uncommon. It's an 82-game schedule before the playoffs. So it's very dense. Now, that is not that dissimilar to a Broadway or West End show when they're performing every night. There's a lot of similarities there. So So having that experience and how to... Now, they're very, very different demands, but there's also a lot of similarities. So that's one thing that's been interesting. I mentioned foot and ankle strength. So foot and ankle strength in ballerinas, for example, I think that does transition in some ways to professional athletes, particularly basketball. So that's probably two examples that are unusual and probably wouldn't expect, but there's certainly some similarities there that some of the work that I did 10 years ago in that space has sort of come up again recently.
Gotcha. And so another question that I kind of had for you, since, you know, this, you're actually the only our second guest that's had an international or non-US PT background. So kind of tell us a little bit more about kind of how your education has informed your training and how it might be different than, you know, what you might see in a traditional American PT education.
Sure. So there's a lot of similarities. I've been fairly fortunate to work in Australia, the United Kingdom as a physical therapist, and then now the US. Now, I don't work clinically here. My role is different. I don't work as a clinical physical therapist. I'm heavily involved with our rehab plans, but I don't clinically treat here. It's just a different role. So I am familiar with the training they have here, obviously. There's a lot of similarities. I think here I really like the idea that there's a progression and there's pathways and how people progress from their undergraduate degree all the way through to specializing in physical therapy. I think there's a lot of strengths. The Australian model is slightly different, where you do a physical therapy degree and then you go on and then you do your specialist training. And there's similarities and differences. The end product, I do think, is very, very similar, though. And it's, in my experience, the people that are very good clinically are very good all over the world, in my experience. So I think the US has an excellent system.
Gotcha. And so I kind of want to talk a little bit more about your role now. You kind of gave a little brief overview, but tell us a little bit more kind of how you work with all these different departments. You're kind of have your hand in a little bit in each of their buckets. So kind of how do you make sure they're all on the same page when regarding one athlete? You know, there's like you mentioned 4, 5, 6 different roles. So how do you kind of make sure that everyone's on the same page for one person?
Yeah, that's a million-dollar question, and I think that's the most important piece too. So that group of people that I oversee, it's about 19 staff members. Now, an NBA team, we have 15 rostered players, so we have more staff just in this area than players. So the key here is exactly what you mentioned, is making sure that everyone is on the same page regarding the player's preparation, if they're injured, their rehabilitation timeline and plan, and who's involved in each part of it. Now, the issues we have, interestingly, are very rarely missing things. We have so many people and we have excellent clinicians. We very rarely miss things. What we do though, is we duplicate things and we do things in triple, or usually for good intention. An example being, you know, if we have a player that we identify has an issue with their hip, for example. Now, what's an issue that we have, or we potentially have, because we have a lot of very high quality clinicians, is we have that player doing some hip strengthening in the training room with one of our physical therapists. They might also be doing it in the weights room with one of our strength and conditioning coaches. And they might be doing it on court with one of our development coaches. So all of a sudden we've tripled the workload that their hip is doing. So we're not actually making their single leg control better. We're fatiguing them and putting them in a risky situation for an injury on court. So how we're trying to manage that is twofold. One, clearly communication is important. Now, professional sport, it's difficult with the nature of it to have a lot of time to sit down and do that. How we do it is we meet as a group, a broader group, every morning, and we go through every player. We have the luxury of the time to do that because we have just the 15 rostered players. So we go through every player, and then we go through where they are currently, what they're working on. So we have a live document that I keep up to date for each player that has their current medical focus. So that might be injury prevention, It might be they're returning from an injury. It might be we've noticed that we've noticed something in their preseason screening that we need to be aware of. It has their current performance focus, which might be an example. We want to improve their vertical jump, or we want to maintain body composition. We have the most recent counter movement jump. We have their most recent body composition testing results, and we have their most recent game or practice load numbers, whether that's high speed distance or whatever we're looking at. So that document that I send around each day, the idea of that is to keep everyone on the same page about what we're working on with that player at the moment.
Gotcha. So another question, kind of going into what you talked about a little bit about load management and kind of reducing risk throughout the season, kind of when do you establish that that connection with that player to make sure that they can kind of buy into that program? Because like you said, they're playing 5 games in 7 nights. And the last thing, I mean, personally, if I were playing 5 games in 7 nights, would be, you know, do a little bit of rehab. First thing I'd want to do is go home and rest and not have to worry about all this extra stuff. So how do you kind of create that like buy-in to make sure that you're on the same, they're on the same page with you of you're trying to make sure they can be on the court as much as possible? Because it makes sense to us as, you know, healthcare professionals. It's like, obviously you just do your rehab and you'll play longer. But to people that are so skilled that have been doing this for so long, they might not see it the same way.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really important point, because I agree. It's very easy to talk, you know, with other clinicians or other people about the perfect program, and then the perfect program doesn't work if it can't be implemented. So it's essential that the program is very good, but the much more important step is how do you implement it? So load management, as I'm sure you're aware, is a very hot topic in the NBA at the moment. I think it's probably worth identifying we're talking about the same thing. So in my mind, load management is not missing games. Load management is trying to get players to perform at their best for the most amount of games that they possibly can. So I think that's a little of a misnomer, actually. People hear load management, and I think all load management means is players need to miss games. And I think if that's how you're operating, you're missing the point. Load management is about getting guys to play as many games as they can. Now, there is also a difference between being available to play and being available to perform. And that's an important distinguishing point as well. So if we're, you know, for want of a better term, load managing someone, that might coincide with a player that's actually doing more work in a different way. So I guess to come back to your question, what we try and do is there's certainly got to be a lot of communication. There's got to be a lot of understanding and awareness from a player about what the plan is, because like I said, you know, let's say we're managing a player through a period of time. We may not be talking about games. We might be saying, look, we want to reduce your practice time. We want to reduce your time on feet. Now, what that might mean is, look, we want to take you out of some of the full court drills this morning, because we know in the last 7 days you've achieved as much high speed running as you normally would in this 7 day period. So we want to take you out of some high speed running with the full court drills, but we want to put you on a bike and we want to make sure you're still getting some heart rate work, some cardiovascular work, or we want to use that time to give you a strength program to make sure that they're on top of your ankle strength and stability. So it's not always, well, it's actually very rarely doing less and sitting down and watching. It's usually alternating and changing what they're doing.
Gotcha. So kind of even building more upon that point, you know, when you're talking about, I'm going to have a player not do full court drills, and instead I might have them get on the bike. How do you kind of communicate with the front office and the coaches, these other stakeholders for these players? Because I'd like to think that most of these coaches now are pretty in tune with how load management works. And it's not just you're sitting the players down because they need a break. It's you're just trying to make sure they can perform. But how do you kind of make sure that they understand that as well? Because, you know, some older school coaches might think, oh, my player doesn't need to do less. They need to do more in order to be better. So how do you kind of make sure that's communicated correctly?
Yeah, that's really important. And that's a large part of my job. So I work very closely with Doc Rivers, who's our head coach, and Daryl Morey, who's our president. They've both been around for a very long time and are excellent at what they do. They've got a really good understanding of the program that we're trying to implement. But part of that, I guess, to answer your question more fully, is by walking the walk, I guess. So what that means is we need to make sure, as much as sometimes we're pulling a player back to give them something different, there's also a lot of occasions where we need to give a player more work. So you know, let's look at where we are at the moment in our season. So we've played 59 games. We're coming into March. Our March schedule is very congested. Now, we know that we've got some players that have been out of our rotation that are likely going to play more minutes over this period of time. So we actually need to make sure that we are getting those players to do more playing at the moment outside of the games rather than less. So load management, again, for want of a better term, for some of our players, is this morning we had them come in and we had them to play 4-on-4 against the coaches and make them go up and down and get some high speed running. So to answer your question, it's a lot easier to communicate with coaches and front office staff when we can show them that, look, these are the players that we need to change what they're doing. These are the players we actually need to get them to do more work at the moment. So it's not always pulling back. Sometimes it's doing more. And that makes the conversations easier. So, it avoids that perception of, you know, every time a physical therapist or an athletic trainer is going to have that conversation, they're trying to talk about something they can't do rather than something they can do. And I think that's a really important point, not just in sport. I think in sports or rehabilitation in any area, there's got to be a big focus on what that person can do. It's so easy to talk about what they can't do. So, you know, in my mind, there's always going to be things that need to be avoided post-surgery or post-injury, but there's a lot of things that can be done. So we should be finding ways to modify whatever it is to encourage people to keep doing things, because that's going to help everything else, their cardiovascular system, their mental health, everything, and just pull back on the areas that we need to.
Right. And so as you're kind of in charge of this larger sports medicine department and team, obviously working with the Sixers, you have a vast amount of resources. But if I could give you a magic wand and you could wave it and you could kind of create the perfect sports medicine environment, what would that look like to you? Just, that's a very broad question, so you can kind of take that however you'd like. But what are some things that you would think, you know, this is how a sports medicine environment should operate?
Okay. Interesting. So off the top of my head, there's a couple of things that I would have. I would want to have some ability to alter the load they're putting through their body. So whether that's you tell me, money's no object, obviously. So I would want something, whether that's an Alter G or an underwater treadmill. I would want something that would allow us to load someone, but not at full, but not at their full body weight. So again, if I come to that point, we have someone with a lower body bone stress injury that we can start to bring them back a little bit earlier. I'd like to have, and I don't think you need a lot of equipment. I think what you would need is a good space that can get movement in all planes, in all directions. And you probably want 30 yards at least, so you can get some drilling movement in, some lateral bounds, some plyometric type work. I think that's important. What else would I need? I would want, depending on the sport, I think we would need some way to quantify what they're doing on the court. So whether that's a GPS unit or something like that. And if we're talking about technology, the other thing that I would love to have, which I think is useful, is something to measure what they're doing in the weights room. So a gym aware unit, for example, that we can measure the speed of their bar, just so we can really nail down when we're working on strength or power or speed, we can show that they're improving and make sure they're hitting what we want. I think that would be enough, honestly. There's obviously, as you sort of alluded to, you can spend a lot of money very easily, but I'm not sure it always helps you. In my experience, a very well designed program that's individual, specific, and then progressively overloaded, I mean, that's, I think, we sometimes overcomplicate it. That's 95% of the secret sauce, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I wish I could give you the magic wand. Unfortunately, I don't have it. However, you're in charge of, you know, you're kind of overseeing a lot of different people in terms of your sports medicine staff. So what are some things that you look for when you're hiring or you're looking for somebody to work for you? What are some characteristics of like good sports clinicians, whether they're registered dietitians, PTs, athletic trainers, strength coaches? What are some things, attributes that you're looking for to make sure that they're a good fit on your team?
I think number one, they've got to be a really good communicator, and that's both verbal and written. I think it's very difficult to step into any environment and not be able to communicate effectively. And it comes back to that point that you might be the best clinician in the world and you can write the best rehabilitation programs. If you're not able to effectively communicate that to the person and convey why it's important, and explain that to someone. In my experience, it very rarely works. So you've got to be a good communicator. I also think you've got to be very, very open that you don't know everything. And it's something, you know, one of my fundamental principles in my career so far is try and work with people that are much better in their area than I am, because that allows me to lean on other people. There's a lot of strengths that I can bring to the department, but I rely on people that have really good sub skill sets that I can lean on for their ability. So you need to be open to work with other people, and you need to be open to understand that there's many ways of doing things. You're absolutely part of the conversation, and that's important, but your way is not always going to be 100% the best way.
Gotcha. All right, Simon, a couple more questions before we get you out of here, because I know you guys are pretty busy in the middle of the season. Kind of walk us through a day in the life of what it's like to be you. If you have a game day, kind of what it's like to kind of do, walk us through that, and then kind of also walk us through kind of like a practice day, and kind of how that might be similar and different depending on the day.
Sure. So we there's really sort of two or three days we have, and they're two of them. So if I go through, maybe I'll just go through my next 48 hours. That's probably the easiest way that I'll capture most of it. So we played last night. So this morning we don't have a game tonight. We're in Philly at the moment. So we had a home game last night. We have a home game tomorrow night. So what that looks like is, following the game last night, we have any players assessed that need anything. Then we'll get them to come in this morning. So today, it was actually a later game last night, so we finished about 11:30 last night. So this morning, we come in. We actually have a group playing today. So we have one guy in rehab. So he comes in at 11:30. He does his rehab session. So what that looks like is, you know, we meet beforehand, the physical therapist, myself, the strength and conditioning coach. We understand what he's doing for that session. And then he'll rotate through the people he needs to see. So he'll start with a physical therapist, he'll then go and do his work with them, then he'll do a session with our strength and conditioning coach, and he'll finish up by doing a session on the court with a development coach. And that's very controlled about what we want in each area. So we'll do that with our injured player. We have a group of players that we wanted to get some more work in today, so they play on the court. So we prescribe, you know, an amount of time, so a volume of work that we would like them to achieve. So that's happened. That'll be today, and then we turn our focus to tomorrow. So tomorrow morning we'll have a shoot around. So we'll have that at 10:00 in the morning. So I'll get in here at 8:30. The players will start to come through. They'll check in with the training room, with the head athletic trainer and myself, or the physical therapist. We'll make sure that nothing is cropped up that we didn't know about. So we'll make sure everybody it turns up as expected. Once we've got that, I'll go and make sure that the Dog Rivers, the head coach, is aware that, you know, everyone is available, or something's come up, or someone is sick, or we need to change something. So he'll know what he's working with for the day, and our front office the same. We'll go through the shoot around. We'll have a few players that will get treatment before and after. They might do, you know, a lifting session, for example. We'll meet at the arena later tomorrow afternoon. They'll go through so the players prepare individually, so they'll all work with, you know, a trainer or a physical therapist. They'll do a warm-up in our weights room at the arena. We'll play the game. And again, we'll go through each guy and see if we need to change anything for the next day. So next day is a travel day, which is very similar. So, you know, and we sort of cycle through that. So it's really about continual reassessment of where the players are, and looking at, you know, we look at 24 hours, 3 days, 7 days, that's sort of our plans. And then we do look at a monthly plan and that timeline shifts. So we look at anything we need to do in the immediate 24 hours for each player. What are we doing over the 3 days or the next 7 days? And then what are we doing over the next 3 or 4 weeks? And then, you know, we try and keep on track of that. I communicate that to the coaches in front office and the rest of our team. And we just sort of keep reassessing where we are. And that's what we do, really.
Yeah, that's an awesome outlook. I mean, we're kind of getting both those. I asked two questions and kind of got answered in one, because you're kind of living them in the next 2 days. So that's awesome. Simon, do you have a favorite memory? Anything that stands out in particular with the 76ers? I'm a Bulls fan, so I don't particularly enjoy you guys pounding on us every time. I think in the past, I don't think Joel Embiid has lost to the Bulls, so that kind of hurts a lot. But do you have anything that stands out to you?
I don't know. I think I mean, any honestly, any playoff game. I mean, it's funny. The NBA, it's such a fun experience to be part of. I mean, there's a lot of games, there's a lot of travel, there's a lot of late nights, but it really is a great experience, and I really enjoy it. So it'd be difficult to single out one. I mean, we've had some excellent wins. We've had some amazing playoff games, but the day to day, honestly, is what I enjoy the most. I really enjoy that process. I mean, you have to be process driven, I think, to work in professional or elite sport. But I think you need to be fairly process driven just for injury rehabilitation. So it's probably not the big things. I think the parts that I've enjoyed the most over the last 3 years here have been, you know, the little ones that probably haven't turned into big issues. It's been when we've sort of identified a small part with a player, and then we've come up with a plan, and it's never got to the media. It's never got to them missing a game because we've caught it early and we've intervened early. So I think my favorite memories, obviously, are the big games and sitting on the bench and all the fireworks. But it's also in the background, working individually and getting to know these players on like a personal level.
Yeah, absolutely. So Simon, last question before we get you out of here. Do you have any advice for anybody that wants to work in professional sports? You know, you kind of talked a little bit about, you know, things that you've learned along your journey, but do you have anything that you would tell to anybody that kind of wants to be in a position like yours?
Yeah, for sure. I think number one, you need to be open. And I think you need to be open to understand the journey's going to change. So possibilities come up when you don't expect them in ways you don't expect. And I think it's important that you understand that, you know, there's a path to follow and it's not always a straight line. So be open to spending time in sports you don't know about, or with people that work in a different way from you, because you'll be amazed, and certainly my experience, you're amazed that you learn new things, and also you'll say, oh, I've learned so many techniques of people that I still use to this day. But at the same time, I've seen other people do things and think, oh, actually, I do know what I'm doing. Like, I would do it a different way, and that's probably more effective. But then this technique you're using is something I'm going to put in my bag. So I would say be open to different and new opportunities. And I think the big one actually is just do the best job you possibly can where you are. I think everyone that wants to progress to professional sport, they generally want to do it as soon as possible. Now, I don't actually think that's the best way to do it, because once you get into it, it's very difficult to continue to upskill. So if you're working in a high school setting or a college setting or a sub-elite setting, if you focus on just doing the best you have with those resources, people will notice it, and that's how you're going to progress. And it really does help you in the future. If you go into an environment where money is no object and budgets aren't a problem, and you have, you know, every piece of technology, I think you lose some of your clinical skills. So it's something I'm always interested in when I interview people is, well, how did you make do when you didn't have the resources? How did you make do when you didn't have anything for rehabilitation? What did you work on then when you just had, we spoke about earlier, like, what would you like? I'd like a 30-yard space. But what did you do in that space? If you had, you know, you had 15 cones and 30 yards of turf, design me a program, because you have, and the experience you learn by just working in different environments and making do, I think, is really valuable. And I do think it transfers to professional sports. So a long answer, but I think be open to new experiences and just do everything you can and be really good at where you are at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great piece of advice. Simon, I think this was a great podcast, and I think I learned a lot personally, and hopefully everyone else that is listening will too. Do you have anything that you'd like to plug before we get you out of here?
No. I'm not sort of huge in the social media. I've listened to a few of your podcasts. I'm just happy to be involved and throw in my two cents.
Perfect. Simon, I really appreciate you taking some time out of your schedule. And with that being said, this has been the latest episode of the Sports Rehab Experts podcast. Huge shout out to Simon Rice, Vice President of Athlete Care for the Philadelphia 76ers, for coming on to the Sports Rehab Experts podcast. If you liked what you heard or want to hear more episodes from great future guests, please like and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you're listening.